Crime, Wine, and Chaos contains adult language and graphic content. Listener discretion is advised.
Hit us with your best shot, Chaos Kids. I'm Amber.
And I'm Naomi, and this is Crime, Wine, and Fucking Chaos.
Hello. Oh.
Fire away.
Yeah, fire away. Double dog dare you.
Hi, sister. How Hi, are sister. You?
Good. Do you like my sweatshirt that looks like a couch? Does it look like a print of a grandma couch?
Kind of does, yeah. Yeah.
I'm sort of loving
it. It's very like 1992. Mm-hmm. Like grandma couch, but 1992 grandma couch. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah. Uh-huh. I'm vibing with it. What's new?
Well, I mean, I was telling you beforehand that I had to take the cat, Shadow, to the vet today and have a procedure done. And now he's bumbling around the apartment. Oh, look, there he is. Do you see
him? Oh, in the cone of shame.
The cone of shame. And he's giving me weird faces because I gave him some pain medicine because the numbing is wearing off. And so I thought, well, you know, I'll do what I'm supposed to do. And give him some pain medication. Now he's just stoned and being weird. He's like looking over at the wall. I don't know what's going on.
Oh, God.
This poor guy.
He's like tripping balls right now.
Anyway, that's how my day is going. This you know, urgent run to, you know, today it was just like it had to be done. And so I got an appointment yesterday for it this morning. And it's just been dealing with that and trying to get my shit together for this episode. And I did it. I came in right under the wire today.
Coming in hot.
Yep. How about you? What's going on with you?
Oh, you know, shit, not a whole lot. I survived Hell Week and I'm just kind of recuperating, and I'm not going to give away my story today, but this one it's been a slow research all week. I've been binging a docuseries. So it's fresh on my mind and I'm excited to share that with you.
A docuseries, huh?
Yeah. Whoa, man.
Does it involve aliens and cloned babies?
I wish. Is that a thing? Holy shit. What channel is that on?
I just watched this with some friends of mine the last couple of days. It's called Rael. It's on Netflix. It's a new-ish docuseries on Netflix that just dropped, I think, fairly recently. And it's about the Raelians. And it's a cult.
Okay. Sounds like you've got that one in the works then.
Well, I don't know. We'll see. I canceled my Netflix, so I don't have Netflix anymore. So I'd have to, like, you know, borrow someone else's or something. But anyway, sure. What are you drinking?
Thank you for asking. I cracked open a white last night so that I could make my sauce. So, okay, this is kind of dorky. I think it's pronounced ocean, but it's O-S-H-U-N.
Okay.
It's a white wine from South Africa. Ocean. It's pretty tasty. It's a little bit on the sweeter side, which I'm not vibing with, but
sure. All right. Well, okay. I think it's my turn.
To go first with some crime.
They've got a crime for you. So I'm going to tell you about Sarah Pappenheim. Have you heard this story?
No.
Okay. Well, Sarah was born January 30th, 1997. In Ramsey County, Minnesota, to Danae Odegaard and Jerry Pappenheim. And Sarah had an older brother, Josh, who was like 2 or 3 years older than her. Mm-hmm. When Sarah was in the second grade, the family moved to Redding, California. And as Sarah grew up, she turned out to be a very gifted musician.
Wow.
Specifically the drums. And while attending Foothill High School, Sarah was in the jazz band and the marching band. Her band teacher said she was bright and loved playing the drums. She was proud of it. She felt strongly about being a female drummer since that's a scene mostly dominated by males.
I was just going to say, I love a gal on the drums. There's nothing fucking cooler. Yeah.
Right. And she was good at it. She became a leader in the school band and she loved blues, classic rock, and was a huge David Bowie fan.
Oh, I love her.
Mm-hmm. She also actively participated in the drama department and in her community. A mom of two of Sarah's friends said that Sarah was an amazing individual. They all called her Happy Pap.
Oh, cute.
Right? And Sarah was smart. From what I can tell, she was all the things. She was smart, talented, savvy, funny, kind, and very pretty. It was 2016, so it was after she graduated from high school. Her brother, Josh, died by suicide.
Oh, no. Oh.
And as you would imagine, this was devastating for Sarah and her family.
Yeah.
And after she graduated, Sarah and Danae left California and moved back to Minnesota to Twin Cities. I'm not sure if Sarah was taking college classes while she was there, but she was super immersed in the jazz and blues scene during that time, which apparently in like St. Paul, Minneapolis, there's like a big thriving like jazz and blues scene.
All right. Good for her. That's a badass.
And apparently she'd been jamming out at some of the music venues there since she was like 15. I get the sense, okay, that maybe she, so some of the stuff was like uncertain. I'm speculating, but I got the sense that she spent time there in the summer, maybe on school breaks. I couldn't find definitive information about this, but I get the feeling that possibly the move to Reading was due to Danae and Jerry splitting up. Mm-hmm. And maybe Sarah was in Minnesota so much because she was out there on visits to her dad or maybe other family. I'm not totally sure. I know that at some point, Danae and Jerry split up.
Okay.
So that's my guess, because they were saying that she'd been playing in this music scene in Twin Cities since she was like 15 years old. Right? Okay.
Yeah.
But she didn't move back there. She was living in Reading at that time, and she didn't move back there until after she graduated high school.
Okay.
So this music scene is where she would meet Adam Pryor, and the two would become very good friends. Adam also plays jazz and blues, and he's a keyboardist, and the two played together all the time. It's unusual for someone as like so young to be so good in this particular genre of music. I would say it's rare that young people are even into jazz and blues at all.
Right. Yeah. It's right? Jazz is hard.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And yeah.
And so like her and Adam were like closer in age, right? They were like kind of the young kids on the scene. Mm-hmm. And Sarah was so good that she jammed with old timers like all the time. And they all were like super impressed with her.
Wow.
Sarah became so well known for her drumming, even so much as to pick up a mentor in funk legend and former Prince drummer Jelly Bean Johnson.
Shit. I always forget that's where Prince was. He's from the Midwest. Yeah.
That's right.
Okay.
That's
cool, right. Cool. Okay.
So Jelly Bean nicknamed Sarah Thumper because she hit the drums as hard as the guys did, and he called her a great spirit. Mm-hmm. And Sarah loved it there in Twin Cities and playing this music with all these super talented musicians. She was making friends and doing what she was meant to do. Adam said that Sarah was just so special in so many ways. Beyond being talented, she had a big heart and tried to help everyone that she could. And Sarah was haunted by the death of her brother, Josh. Mm-hmm. She carried it with her every day. So much so that she decided to pursue a degree in psychology, not only to better understand Josh, but in the hopes of helping others to avoid what happened to her brother.
She is like an angel on earth, this one. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh.
So Sarah was off on an adventure, even though she loved the music scene in Minneapolis and it would hurt her to be away from it. In 2016, she moved to Rotterdam in the Netherlands to attend Erasmus University and study in the Department of Behavioral and Social Sciences.
Shit.
She moved into some kind of dorm-like situation about a mile from the university campus that has student rooms and studios and other apartments. And while taking classes, she also picked up a part-time job at a local kebab restaurant. Her boss, Fikret Egemen, said Sarah immediately fit into the team there. Quote, from day one, she picked up everything. She was like family. She always worked with a smile all day long. No problem. Angel.
Oh, God, I just got chills. Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Sarah had a boyfriend in Rotterdam, Nico Karsemeijer, who lived in the same dorm building down the hall from the apartment that Sarah shared with Joel Schelling, who was a fellow musician. Some reports say that Sarah had moved to Rotterdam to then like moved in with her boyfriend, but she definitely wasn't living with him in 2018, although they were dating at this time. I don't know if they ever actually lived together or if they just were living in the same dorm,
in the same building. Yeah.
Yeah. Joel played the cello quite well. Some said he played the double bass. I'm not a musician, but I think these are like very similar. Like, is this the difference between a violin and a fiddle? I think it's the difference between a violin and a fiddle. And it's really just like how you play it, whether you call it a double bass or you call it a cello.
Probably.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sure. Unless there's some in-betweeny instrument that I'm unaware of that is deeper than a cello, but higher than a bass.
Right?
Yeah. Interesting. All right.
Okay. So music is the thing that Sarah and Joel connected on. In November of 2018, Sarah wrote a tribute to her brother on Instagram, and it reads, November 13th, 2018, today would have been your 23rd birthday. The time without you here has been unbearably emotional. It's been over 2.5 years, but it still feels like yesterday. I wish I could understand, but in some ways, I hope I never do understand it because I never want anyone to feel as bad as you did.
Oh.
Yeah. And the next month, in early December of 2018, Sarah started texting her bestie Adam and her mom stuff about Joel that made them both a bit concerned.
Uh-oh. And this is the roommate, not the boyfriend,
this
right?
This is the roommate, not the boyfriend. Nico is the boyfriend. Joel is the roommate. She told him that. So like they basically shared an apartment. They each had their own bedroom, and then they shared, you know, like kitchen, living room, bathroom, whatever. She told him that Joel got mad, like a lot. All the time, he was mad about something, usually people. Hmm. And when Adam or her mom expressed concern for her safety, Sarah reassured them that she was safe and that Joel was her friend. And that when he did get angry, she was the only person who could calm him down. She said they would talk about music all night long, and they really clicked on that. But then as time went on, Joel was just getting like highs and lows. Hmm. And so I think Sarah was really just trying to be like a good friend to him. Some of her texts to Adam did seem weird to him. And he asked her like, what's going on? And she replied, I work full time and I have full time and I have school full time. And everything is just so fucked up right now. My roommate told me he's going to kill 3 people. So I'm going to have to go to the police.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah. But Sarah never expressed to Adam that she was in danger or that Joel was threatening her.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder how much her studies and her compassion and her like need to understand like mental health problems was like making her think that that she could like, you know, mm-hmm. like help Joel through this stuff because she was, you know what I mean?
I was just thinking that, or like the guilt of like, if she doesn't, you know, like she doesn't want a what if to be weighing on her again of like, you know what I mean? Like, I can imagine it's important for her to be present, be there, figure out what's going on. Don't let someone you care about go into a dark place by themselves kind of thing. Yeah.
Right. Totally. Yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then Adam tended to believe that she was probably safe because he didn't feel like she was in danger, just that Joel had a temper and got mad at some people. And he also trusted Sarah and knew her to be, you know, responsible. So, you know, she would go to the police if she felt it was necessary and that it would get taken care of.
Right.
Later, it would come out that Sarah had called a hotline to report people showing disturbed behavior. It's literally called the Disturbed Persons Reporting Center or something like that. Or maybe that's like the like literal translation from Dutch or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Sorry, that's not funny. Sometimes literal translations are kind of funny, but.
Kind of funny, yeah. aid workers visited Joel twice, but they saw no reason to intervene immediately. He showed no acute problems. He looked well-groomed. He was approachable and he had a clear mind.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, Sarah did report to someone, some authority, maybe the same reporting center that she had already contacted, that Joel told her he wanted to become a serial killer and that it was time for revenge.
Oh, God. Where's this kid's parents? Do we know?
No.
Okay.
Not really.
All right.
But the social workers did not take immediate action and did not inform the police.
Okay.
Sarah's mom, Danae, said she told Sarah not to be around Joel, but Sarah wasn't having it. Sarah said, "Mom, he's my friend. I'm his only friend. He would get angry, but I can always talk him down and change his mind."
She says, "Only friend."
That's what Sarah said.
That's a red flag.
Yeah.
Yikes. That's a lot of pressure for one person.
Right?
Yeah.
Danae reiterated to Sarah that she needed to get out of there because he seemed dangerous. And so Sarah told her mom that she was going to go get some clothes from her apartment after Joel left for class, and she was going to go stay with Nico.
Okay.
On December 12th, witnesses heard arguing and screaming coming from Sarah and Joel's apartment. And later, Rotterdam police received a call from Joel's mom.
Oh.
She told them that he, Joel, had called her and said that he stabbed one of his roommates.
Isn't she his only roommate?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, no.
The police went out to Sarah and Joel's apartment, and what they found was fucking horrible. This is the bad part, guys.
Okay.
Sarah was found in the bathtub, stabbed and beaten. She had 37 stab wounds and cuts all over her body.
Oh, my God.
The police tried unsuccessfully to revive her, but Sarah was pronounced dead at the scene. It's speculated by her family that it was when Sarah went to get more clothes, thinking that Joel was not at the apartment, that the altercation took place that led to Sarah's murder.
Oh my God. These poor Danae and Jerry, both of their children.
Yes. Exactly.
No.
Exactly. I know. God. Exactly. Police had a very clear and obvious suspect, and they immediately jumped to tracking down Joel, who was not in the apartment when they arrived. He was discovered to have boarded a train heading out of Rotterdam and was subsequently arrested when he got off the train about 65 miles south of Rotterdam in the city of Eindhoven. He had his cello slash double bass with him, mm-hmm. and another traveler on the train filmed the whole arrest.
Oh, okay, nosy Nelly, but okay.
Cops surrounded Joel and cleared the platform while they examined his instrument case. Joel was wearing jeans and a black nylon jacket. He was ordered to his knees and to put his hands behind his back while the cops cuffed him. The witness that filmed all this told one newspaper that he'd been on the same train as Joel, and when he was being arrested, quote, "he stayed extremely calm, like he had just finished a yoga session. Maybe he was just in a psychotic state of mind. He did not speak and almost didn't blink his eyes."
Oh, no. Like catatonic? That's spooky. I mean, not blinking. Spooky-ooky. That's too far. That's creepy.
You've gone too far, sir.
Blink. God, I don't like
blink,
it.
Blink, man. Blink.
Oh,
Joel basically like immediately confessed to murdering Sarah. Mm-hmm. Danae and Jerry had to set up a GoFundMe to raise the money they needed to go to Rotterdam and get Sarah's body and put her to rest. The jazz and blues music scene in Minnesota, her friends there put on some fundraising shows to help out. This all happened right before the holiday break, and Sarah was supposed to be going home to Minnesota to spend Christmas with her family and play music with her friends. She was actually even scheduled to play a show while she was home.
Oh, God.
Joel's trial was about a year later in like late November, early December of 2019. At trial, Joel said he couldn't remember killing Sarah, only that he knew he was angry with her. And then he said, quote, "and then I saw the blood on the wall and she was lying on her back."
Hmm.
Okay. According to experts who advised the judges, it sounds like we're in another one of those court systems that has a panel of judges rather than a judge and a jury.
Every court is the Supreme Court,
I guess.
Okay.
I don't. Yeah. Joel had been experiencing psychosis at the time of the murder and also asserted that Joel was autistic and schizophrenic.
Okay.
The judges in the case concluded that Joel had not set out to kill Sarah, that it was not premeditated, and they charged him with manslaughter instead of murder.
Yikes. They don't have like a second degree option there, I guess.
I don't know. I guess.
Okay.
Joel was given 6 years in prison.
What?
And indefinite psychiatric detention after that, with a minimum stay there of 2 years.
Indefinite with a minimum of 2 years?
Like, he has to be there for 2 years, but it could be longer if he doesn't get better.
Okay. What do you think about this sentence?
I mean, there's no such thing as justice.
Mm-hmm.
Spending the life in prison, killing him, that doesn't bring Sarah back. That's not justice. That's revenge.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on the prison system, you know, we're not talking about the states. So I don't know. I don't know what the prison system's like in the Netherlands.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if the goal is rehabilitation, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, we'd have to trust the assessment of Joel is true. And if it's true that he's sick and he needs help.
Mm-hmm.
He may only serve 4 of those 6 years in prison, because in the Netherlands, it is standard for prisoners to serve only 2/3 of their sentence if they are on good behavior.
Okay.
Danae was there for the trial and the sentencing. She'd been in Rotterdam at that point for like a month. She told a Dutch broadcaster that the sentence was bullshit.
Mm. Yeah.
She said, quote, "I just feel that injustice has been had here, and I was hoping this country would step up and protect my daughter, at least give her some respect afterwards. But to hear that he's probably going to be out in 4 years, I'm appalled. He got 6 years, but I got a life sentence for my daughter being murdered. I have a life sentence every 2 years. I have to go back there to make sure he stays away."
God, this poor family.
And while the sentencing was a blow to Danae and her attorney, they did win an investigation into that psychological care team that came into contact with Joel and did not raise the alarm on him prior to Sarah's murder. Although I couldn't find any updates on this investigation.
Okay.
Jerry, Sarah's dad, started a scholarship fund in Sarah and her brother Josh's name, the Josh and Sarah Pappenheim Memorial Psychology Scholarship, for students wishing to make a difference in the mental health industry, especially ones who aspire to make advances in the area of suicidology. And while an interest in music is not required, they do pay extra attention to applicants who have an interest in creating music and or using music as a part of mental health treatments.
Oh my God, I love that. Music is a form of mental health treatment. It really is.
100%.
Yeah. Oh 100%. My God. Oh my God, sister.
And a part of her obituary says, "Sarah will forever be known for her smile that seemed to light up the world, and the world is a darker place without her."
Mm-hmm.
And that is the story of the murder of Sarah Pappenheim.
Wow. That's fucking awful.
Sorry.
Oh. I think it's so dangerous too when you're, I have seen it before, when you're a psychology major, but you're like baby psychology major and you are getting really excited about what you're learning. And I think there's a tendency to think of yourself like maybe more capable of handling those things than other people are.
Yeah.
And you're not, you know, there's a reason why you have like supervised hours and residency and, you know.
Yes. All
not that, you know, not that that's what she was doing, but I'm sure she thought that maybe out of the peers that she would be the most capable. And I don't know. God, it's just so sad.
I know. And I was doing the same thing you were, just absolutely heartbroken for Danae and Jerry, like both their kids.
Fuck.
Unimaginable.
Yeah, one family should not have to have more than one thing.
Right?
It's like something, yeah, there's a glitch in the matrix or something. Like, why? I don't understand why. So fucked. Ugh. Thanks for that, I guess.
You're welcome.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. You have a palate cleanser for us?
Sort of. I mean, it's not super cheerful. Okay, so this, I'm calling this a redo. Not so much an update, but a redo. So I'm not cheating. I want to set the record straight here. And
okay,
in the baby days of the podcast, I think year one.
Okay.
Like I did the case of Natalia Grace.
Natalia Grace.
Mm-hmm. And there's very recently a whole bunch of new shit that has come out. So I am going to retell the story and I'm not going to make any assumptions that anybody heard me do the story the first time. So I'm just going to start from the beginning. Okay.
Okay. Wait, is Natalia Grace the one that got abandoned because she was supposed to have been an adult instead of a child?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, there.
Have you watched the new docuseries?
I have not watched the new docuseries, but I was semi-aware of the case in the media. And then I feel like I did listen to the episode you did in the baby days of the podcast where you covered this.
Baby days, yep.
I don't remember exactly like how you covered it, but like I wasn't there. So like it's new to me.
Okay.
You get clean slate, sister. And as far as we're concerned, like it doesn't exist. The only people that can actually go back and listen to it if they really want to are the Chaos Kids Club members because all those episodes are behind the paywall.
Mm-hmm. Safely behind the paywall. Okay. So this
Yes.
This is the story of Natalia Grace. So according to records that exist, Natalia was born in Ukraine on September 4th, 2003.
Okay.
Her mom knew at the time that she was going to be placing her for adoption, and Natalia was taken from the hospital directly to an orphanage.
Okay.
So she was born with spondy epiphyseal dysplasia congenita. I did it.
Layman's, you did it. Nailed it.
henceforth, SEDC, which is a rare genetic disorder that results in a short stature and skeletal abnormalities that primarily affect the spine and long bones of the arms and legs. So it's a form of dwarfism, but it's a pretty rare form.
Okay.
It only happens in 1 in 100,000 births.
Okay.
So not super common. So it was clear that Natalia would need adoptive parents that would be able to provide her with the type of care that she needed. And in 2008, she was adopted by Diane and Gary Cacino. And it's, again, not clear. So they were in New Hampshire and they adopted her. It's not clear if this was her first time to the U.S., if she was in Ukraine and this is when she moved to the U.S., or if she came to the U.S. before that. And she doesn't really have a recollection, and it's a whole thing where like,
well, yeah, because she was like 5 when they adopted her. Like, I don't remember. Shit, yeah. Like, and 10 barely. So.
Well, it looked like too, the orphanage where she was in Ukraine was like pretty dilapidated. And they said at one point there was like some big sewage leak problem and a bunch of their documents are just gone. I'm not really sure.
Okay.
So for whatever reason, Diane and Gary decided that they weren't able to care for Natalia, and they decided to rehome her.
Like an animal.
Yeah, apparently this is a thing that you can do. There's even, like, you can find them sometimes on, like, Facebook Marketplace.
I'm sorry, what?
That's a true thing. Rehoming children. This is the second time I've done a case where this is a thing. And it's like, we're not talking about fostering or temporary guardians. We're talking about you've legally adopted them. Why are you allowed to just say, never mind?
I mean, you know, okay. So, you know, it's tangent. You know that back in the day, like there used to be, well, we had orphanages and shit when that was like more of a, when that was like a thing, right? Mm-hmm. Orphanages used to be a thing and they just aren't a thing anymore. We got the, like the foster care system and it's a whole new fucking setup, but like orphanages used to be a thing, and then like nunneries, mm-hmm, where they would take care of children was a thing. And like I've definitely read multiple stories of like old-timey stories where like parents would just like drop their kids off there and leave them there for a while and then like come back and get them sometimes.
You just need like a vacay from being a parent.
Or like, I can't afford them right now, I'll come get them when I can afford them again or something. Like it's very weird.
Wow.
But like, is there a statute of limitations on this? Like, because like, obviously you can't do that anymore. Like you and I as parents, there was never a time where there was a place where we could just like decide we didn't want to be parents of the kids that we raised, that we birthed anymore.
No.
Like, adopted parents can do this?
It's weird. Yeah, I don't
it's
know.
It's legal?
Apparently. Listen, I don't know. I didn't take a deep dive into those laws. I think it's very odd. Yes, the idea of rehoming a child like it's an animal.
I can't. Okay.
Okay.
So they rehome her.
So they're, yeah, they're like, no. So at the time, there was a couple who, they were also little people, and they wanted to adopt Natalia. They had even spent some holidays with Natalia. She was super close to their daughter. They were really like geared up to adopt her. But ultimately, they like didn't win. And she was adopted by Christine and Michael Barnett instead.
Oh, here we go. Here we go. These people.
Here comes rich white lady.
Oh.
So Michael and Christine had been married for 15 years at the time. They had what Michael later described as a perfect marriage, to which I say bullshit. There's no such thing.
There's no such thing. Okay, mm-hmm. Michael.
Oh, and Michael is, we'll get to it. He's not well.
okay.
They had three biological sons, Jacob, Wesley, and Ethan. They lived in Indiana. So they got the news that they were able to adopt Natalia, and the entire family heads to Hollywood, Florida to the adoption agency, Adoption by Shepherd Care, to pick Natalia up.
Okay. And at what point, how old is she at this point? How long did that first couple in New Hampshire or whatever have her?
Like 2 years. So I think she's presumably six.
She's six or seven. Because you said she was born in 2003. She was adopted in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
They had her for 2 years. So she would be almost seven at this point.
Maybe. Like that's the point of this whole story is like, you tell me. But yes, she's between the ages of 6 and 8 at this point.
Okay.
Okay. So Christine and Michael's son, Jacob, has autism. And not only that, but he's a genius, like a legit fucking genius. And Christine had just written a book about Jacob called The Spark, A Mother's Story About Nurturing Genius and Autism.
I feel like I want to vomit right now.
Oh, it gets worse.
Okay.
Christine, she also went on to start her own like in-home daycare specifically for other children who have autism, which gave them a chance to connect with each other and for the parents to connect, you know, with other parents. And in this book, Christine talks about Jacob having an incredibly high IQ and his ability to do physics at a young age. And several people who have read the book, I haven't, say that Christine is basically giving herself all the credit for Jacob's genius. Like, it wasn't about Jacob. It was about how she got him there, how she created a genius. Because she knows how to maneuver through autism.
This is another one of those, like, by proxy situations. One of those, like, pathologies by proxies.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Not just Munchausen, because there's other versions of this. This is like some, not Munchausen's by proxy, but like,
whatever the polar opposite of that is.
Yeah. It's like success and pride and pedestaling by proxy. I don't know how else to.
Yeah. Living vicariously through your children or. And
yeah,
Jacob is a legit genius. Like he is some sort of like prodigy.
Okay.
And he just is. But he would have been either way. So anyway, so she gives herself all the credit saying that with the diagnosis of autism, that things could have gone horribly wrong for him and that she was able to nurture the genius out of him.
Sure, sure, sure.
They go to get her from this agency and the entire family spends the day at Disney World and they stay the night in a hotel in Florida. And it's when they're back in their hotel and Christine is giving Natalia a bath that she starts yelling for Michael to come into the bathroom. She's like, freaking out, right? So when Michael comes in, Christine is upset and she's like gesturing for him to look in the tub, like blah. And when he does, he sees that their 6-year-old is what they were told by the adoption agency at this time. Their 6-year-old daughter, Natalia, has full pubic hair. Okay.
I recall this. I recall this part of the story. Yes.
Yes. So this obviously kind of rattles them, but they're like, okay, that's all right. No biggie. A few months later, when they're back home in Indiana, the Barnetts claim that they learned that Natalia has started her period and that she has been hiding it from them.
Okay.
Then the Barnetts take her to the family doctor, and this doctor puts them in contact with another family who has a child who's around the same age as Natalia, who also has the same dwarfism that she has.
Okay.
And so they set up a play date with this little kiddo, Therese, and the parents notice that Natalia seems much bigger than this girl who is her age, and that Natalia is also more articulate.
Okay.
So they start to suspect that Natalia is much older than her records say she is, and they think that she might actually be an adult who is pretending to be a child.
An adult who's pretending to be 6 or 7 years old.
Because she's small in size. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So even though Natalia had been living in the U.S. with the, I think it's Sacconis, for 2 years prior to being placed with the Barnetts, they also think it's strange that she has no accent and that she is unable to speak or understand any Ukrainian. Which,
okay,
I don't necessarily think that's strange at all, because if this is correct, and again, nobody knows for sure, if she was approximately 3 years old when she came to the U.S., like, that's when kids are just learning how to speak anyway. There's not going to be an accent.
Right. And there's also going to be a real quick loss of the ability to speak Ukrainian if you if she's not around it. She's not being spoken to that daily.
But of course, they're saying this from the perspective of, yeah, she's been here for 2 years, but she's also an adult. So,
okay.
At one point they were like, in addition to this other little kiddo that had the same kind of dwarfism, they were paired up with some lady who was from Ukraine and spoke Ukrainian. And they thought, oh, cool. Like, we'll invite her over for dinner and maybe that will make Natalia feel connected. And the lady was just talking and Natalia had no idea what she was saying. So,
okay.
They're just all these things they're stacking together to say, like, who is this person, right? So 5 months into her being with the Barnetts, they start to say that Natalia is violent and she's trying to kill them. They say that she is urinating and defecating on the floor. She's hiding knives under her bed. And she even tried to poison Christine by putting Pledge in her coffee. I mean, I don't think
this is...
Yes.
It just doesn't track, right? Because, like, if she was really, okay, if she was really an adult and she was just playing some con, like, there would be no reason to do that, because her motivation for pretending to be a child and being adopted would be to be taken care of. And so it doesn't make any sense to then try to murder her caretakers.
Right.
Unless this is the plot of some, like, ridiculous, like, you know, like, B movie on Netflix.
Well, it's funny that you should say that, because right around this time, there was a fictional horror movie that had just come out called The Orphan. And this was exactly the plot of that.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So 2 years after adopting Natalia, the Barnetts go to court. They have a letter from their longtime family doctor and friend stating that based on his examination, it is his professional opinion that Natalia is not a child. And based on this evidence and the accounts of what the Barnetts were experiencing, like the pubic hair and all the things, the judge signs the order allowing Natalia's age to be legally changed. And a new birth certificate is issued saying that Natalia was born in 1989 rather than 2003. Changing Natalia from the age of 9 to the age of 22.
Whoa, that's quite a leap.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the Barnetts then rent her an apartment, get her some groceries, and leave her there.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's what, I mean, what else do you do? That's
mm-hmm.
It's clearly the next step.
Yep. And all the while, Natalia is maintaining that she is a child. And she's like, what the fuck am I supposed to do? She's just like living in an apartment by herself. So basically, this is where my story ended the last time I told it. And it was like, right. who the hell knows? Is she a kid? Is she an adult? And in the court of public opinion, people were really feeling for the Barnetts that they just got swindled by this psycho. Right. Okay. So here's what the latest is. Okay.
Okay.
While at the first apartment, which was in a very rough neighborhood in Lafayette, she received several complaints from neighbors because she would just wander into other people's apartments, like looking for people. And she was eventually evicted from there. So the Barnetts rented her another apartment. And this time, after dropping Natalia off at her new place, the Barnetts packed up and moved to Canada.
Right.
Mm-hmm. At one point, they had failed to pay her utility bill and Natalia was without power for a week. Okay. And keep in mind, even if she is an adult, this apartment is not suitable for a little person. She's on the second floor. I think it's a total of 17 stairs to get up. She can't reach the counter. She can't reach the shelves in the fridge. Like,
there's no accommodations here.
No. This is like a dilapidated, this is the cheapest place we could find. Good luck with your life. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. And it's also during this time that Natalia is attending some kind of adult learning center. I think the Barnett set this up to possibly like so she could get her GED or something. And the staff at this facility says that she absolutely doesn't have the education or language skills at all of an adult. And she seems very childlike.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So they alert the local law enforcement and they start doing their own investigation into Natalia and where she came from and how old she was and all the things. And it was at this time that one of the neighbors at this new place, a couple that had several adopted children, Antoine and Cynthia Mann, Bishop Antoine, stepped in to take care of Natalia.
Okay.
Okay. So all this is being investigated and this case is getting all this public attention because it, you know, it sounds like the plot of the horror movie. And
right.
So some evidence that we didn't learn about until recently is the DuPauls, which were the little couple that wanted Natalia that lost out to the Barnetts. They had taken several pictures of her because in the weeks leading up to when they thought they were going to adopt her, like she was coming over for home visits and she would like have sleepovers with their daughter. She spent holidays there. She went trick-or-treating, right?
Right.
So they had a couple of photos of Natalia with their little kiddo. And you can clearly see in these photos that Natalia had missing baby teeth with new teeth growing in. Mm-hmm. Then it is learned that during the time that the Barnetts were trying to re-age her, they had taken her to a dentist and had x-rays done on her teeth. And you can clearly see adult teeth growing under the baby teeth.
She still has baby teeth?
Yeah.
They had this evidence.
Yes. And the dentist made an educated estimate at this time that based on her teeth, that she was between the ages of 7 and 11.
Mm-hmm.
They had also taken her to an endocrinologist who confirmed what the dentist had determined. But because the Barnetts weren't getting the answers that they wanted, they were ultimately able to get their longtime family doctor.
To just write them a note.
Yep. And just nobody needs to know that she was taken to these other doctors who were like, no, she's a child.
Holy shit. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And unfortunately, they were both acquitted in 2023. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Whatever.
Uh-huh. So in August of 2023, while Natalia is on her journey to set the record straight and clear her name, she says that Christine was extremely abusive to her. She said that she was pepper sprayed and beat with a belt.
Holy shit.
Mm-hmm. Christine even took her out of school because she claimed that she was receiving several calls per week from the school saying that Natalia was a problem and she was purposely trying to run over other kids with her wheelchair.
Right.
But yeah, but Natalia's first grade teacher has since stated that Natalia never did those things. She never called the Barnetts and complained, and Natalia's behavior was fine.
Mm-hmm.
Which also, it's like not uncommon for it to be a red flag when children are being abused for the parents to decide to homeschool them.
Yeah.
Because school is sort of like the last safeguard of.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. The mandatory reporters that they go see every single day.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Natalia says that Christine would give her physics schoolwork and demand that she do it. And Natalia would tell her that she didn't understand it and didn't know what she was supposed to do. And so it very clearly seems like the motivation behind all of this for Christine was to turn another disabled child into a genius.
Oh, Jesus.
So that she could continue to get praised for her greatness. And when Natalia was not a genius and instead somebody that required a lot of care and a lot of work, she decided to figure out a way to get rid of her.
Yep.
So the mans take Natalia, this is her like new pseudo parents who stepped in, to a pathologist. And this is in August of 2023, who is able to do a DNA test that can determine a person's age, give or take 3 years.
Okay.
It is determined in 2023 that Natalia is between the ages of 19 and 22.
Yep.
The Barnetts made her 22 in 2012, which means she was actually around 9 years old when she was dropped off in an apartment to live as an adult.
I can't believe those fuckers got acquitted.
That is like Marla being in her own apartment. Grocery shopping, cooking dinners, knowing to lock up at night. What the fuck? Like,
this is crazy. These people suck.
Crazy. Crazy. So the mans adopted Natalia in 2023. I think Natalia's last name is still Barnett and that bothers her and she wants them to legally be mom and dad, but I don't know how much it matters because now she really is an adult. So she's not like being, you know, adopted in the way that we think, but still it was important to her. And I think there's something brewing on Natalia's end, possibly with a civil case. I have no idea what the statute of limitations are for child abuse in Indiana.
Right.
But it seems like she's got something up her sleeve. Michael is fucking nuts. He and Christine divorced and he hasn't seen two of his sons since 2015. Jacob lives with Michael, and Jacob has said that he never received any of the money that Christine got for the book, even though she promised him some. And it's really sad. Like, Jacob is living in Michael's basement, and it looks like, you know, an unfinished basement. And he looks like, I think he's kind of unemployed and literally just like living in a basement. And he's got these like long physics calculations written everywhere on the wall.
He's like, got a beautiful mind situation going on down there.
Yes. Just wasted. Yeah. And so, yeah, that is the case of Natalia Grace. Wow. 9 years old.
Holy shit.
And when you look at the pictures of how old she was or how old she looks when she was re-aged, like, she very clearly looks like a kid. Like, I have no idea. Children do not just look like short adults.
No.
Like, she had little kid features. Oh, my God.
That is fucking wild.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Once again, the white savior lady comes in and then turns it all to shit because it doesn't go the way she wants it to.
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, it's so fucking gross. Even when they were doing their depositions before they got acquitted and they pulled up text exchanges between Michael and Christine, Christine more than once referred to Natalia with the M word. Like, not only was she super not pro fucking disabilities, but she was full on bigoted.
Oh.
You know?
Yeah.
Like that damn little M word. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. It's just so. And the thing is, too, is like this kiddo started off in what may likely have been a very abusive, what looked to be a very dirty orphanage in Ukraine, then got rehomed more than once of people not wanting her. So even if she was like urinating on the floor or running over other children, it's like she's got some serious fucking trauma. And at no point is anybody getting her in therapy. Like,
right.
It would have been totally okay even if she was doing those things. It would have been understandable.
Right.
God. Ugh. Some people.
I'm still annoyed that they got completely acquitted. Like they didn't get anything. Well, I hope Natalia does get something out of
them. I do too. And I feel terrible for that other couple that really like.
They really wanted her. Yeah. It reminds me of the story you told about the lesbian couple that like went off the cliff with all the kids. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like mm-hmm. there's somebody who wants these kids.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's somebody who wanted her, like really wanted her, already yeah. bonded with her.
Mm-hmm. And fully understood her needs.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But they didn't win.
Correct.
Like we're trying to buy a house here. Like mm-hmm. we didn't get the winning bid. Like what the fuck does that even mean?
I have no idea. I think that from what it looked like, the Barnetts had an awful lot of money. And I know that Christine made a lot of money off that book. It's just gross when people use their children as like their own decorations. It's just fucking ugh. Gross.
Hate it.
Hate it. Fucking hate it.
But I love that you redid that and we got an update on that. That's some good stuff. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad that Natalia is in a better place. I'm glad she's got parents who love her and are helping her. And
yeah, for sure.
So at least it ended kind of well.
Yeah. I hope the Barnetts get theirs.
Sister. We did it.
We made it. We did. We're on all the things. Go find us on all the things.
Go write us a review on that Apple Podcast app because we had one the other day I saw that was new and it was so sweet.
It was so sweet.
And it made my day. I love it when that happens. Give us a review wherever you listen to us. And if you want that bonus content, we have a new bonus episode every month. And all you got to do is join the Chaos Kids Club. $5 a month, it gets you a bonus episode. And, virtual wine night every time we get 10 more. Hey, we got to schedule that. We have another virtual wine night on the books.
And let's talk about it for 3 more episodes first, though. How about that?
You know what? You could also be proactive.
You're
about
so
it.
Good at I'm that. Just, You're so, okay. I will. I can't even find a goddamn picture. Like, what am I doing with my life?
Oh, sister, oh my God. I love you so much.
Love you so much. That was so chaotic. Goodbye. Bye. Bye-bye.
By 8th Direction Records. Artwork by Joshua M. Davis. Music by Paul Abner. If you would like to support the show, you can visit our Patreon page at crimewineandchaos.com/Patreon. Cheers.
By the way, sure. I fucking love your pants. I love rainbow shit too, man. It's just, you can't not be happy when there's a rainbow. Okay, so.
That's great.